Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast, whose death has been greatly exaggerated. We're still here. We had episode 200 last week, our retrospective. We're now firmly looking forward. This is being recorded on Wednesday, the 1st of February, 2012. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me up in Edinburgh, I have...
I told you I was ill!
Hello, it's Ewan Spence here, quoting Spike Milligan, because that's what we do, because we're revolutionary and modern and zeitgeisty.
You can always rely on Ewan for a pop culture quote. And also up in hell we have.
Hey, David Gilson, hello. And if Symbian is dead and we're still moving, that means we're zombies, so which means we're coming for everyone else's brains.
I'm losing track of this podcast already. And down in Sussex we have.
Hello, everybody. It's Rafe Blanford here.
Yes, so bringing us all back to sanity, Nokia Bell or Symbian Bell, whatever you want to call it, really. I guess it's Nokia Bell built on Symbian Bell, just to confuse everyone. It apparently is now fairly imminent. I know we've been saying this for months, and for various reasons it got delayed and pushed past Christmas. Whether you call it a delay or not depends on how you believe the original wording, but either way, Bell is coming. And there was a post was put up and then pulled down over on a Far East site, referring to sometime in about a week and a half's time. And that feels about right to me, Rafe.
Yeah, it feels about right to me. I suspect the rollout will start sort of in the second, maybe the third week of February. I'm sure Nokia will want to get quite a bit out before MWC, because there might well be subsequent announcements there. And that kind of follows the pattern they did with Anna, actually, where they released it a couple of weeks before they then announced Bell in the sort of first series of Bell devices. But yes, I think it finally is imminent. Nokia, please don't let us down here or make us all into liars. But I suspect this is, of course, in reference to the existing devices. The 701, the 700 and the 603, of course, already have Bell. And I can now say that the Nokia N8 and some of the other sort of first generation Symbian 3 devices are actually shipping from the factory with Bell built in. And so really it is now imminent for the existing devices. That update will be available via most likely the PC. I think because it's such a big update, it's less likely to be available over the air. So you'll have to use either the PC or the Mac software to get that up to date. But we will, of course, have full details on the site. So some countries will get it before others. And the usual news on operator variants, they may take a little bit longer. But certainly I would expect kind of the big markets to get Bell on the unlocked devices within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I did post a news story, guys, on looking forward to Nokia Bell or Symbian Bell, and looking at the different features, the different advantages, and a few caveats as to whether you might not want to upgrade after all, who knows, and also things to be aware of around the update time. For me, I guess the big thing is that on Nokia N8, getting the improved performance, the improved RAM handling, so that perhaps big games don't crash quite so much. On the E6, I'm looking forward to having using better use of that rather limited 2.46-inch screen, and with the slimmer top status bar. David, anything particular leap out from Nokia Bell at you? What are you most looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the flexibility of the widget. I like how the application grid can be sorted alphabetically. That's going to be a big step forward. However, I have noticed on the 700 that I have to keep doing that. It doesn't seem to stick. I'm also interested to see what the performance of my trusty old N8 will be with Bell, and whether it will be better or worse.
Ewan?
You know, what I find interesting about Bell is, and Rafe, you don't take this one, it's either or. You go to Bell, you cannot go back again. I don't think you can try Bell on your handset and they go, you know what, I actually preferred Anna. This is a one-shot, isn't it, Rafe?
Yes, that's right. You won't be able to downgrade, or at least not easy, not as far as a consumer's concerned.
Yeah, you can always downgrade, of course, on taking it to a service centre and saying, I don't like Bell, I want Anna back, and they can completely reflash it. But yeah, it's like completely remodelling your lawn, having ripped up all the rockeries and the lawns and the flower beds and completely changed it. You think, well, I'm going to have to completely change it if I want it back again.
And this thing is another reason why it's going to have to be done through your PC suite, and it's not going to be over there, because they're going to want to say to people, look, your phone is going to change. It's going to work differently when you pick it up again. It's not a little bug fix. You know, when you get them just coming in over there, you might go, yeah, put the update through. You know, this isn't a just put the update through. This is a, oh, Vicky Vale, what happened there? So I'm going to watch how Nokia handle this. We've talked previously about their communication strategies in the past, and certainly in the last year, they have changed how they talk to the public. So this will need, I think, careful handling.
Yeah. David?
And there's one thing I just remembered. It's about, and this is a very splitting hairs pedantic point, but I'm representing the E-series people here, is that on on Symbian Anna, we were used to having a whole glorious three lines of a calendar widget, whereas the calendar widget on Symbian Bell, unless I am mistaken and have missed something, it only seems to have one line and just only showing like the next imminent thing, which I think is actually a step backwards, and I'm aware that's a very tiny point, but for anyone who's into productivity and just like, or they need a second brain like I do, that is a little bit of a problem.
Yes, I'll agree with David there. It's a shame that some of the other widgets haven't been updated, although it's interesting to see that some of them are being updated separately of the platform itself. We've seen the social widgets updated recently. We'll get to that later in the podcast. There's also been an email widget update. But yes, a calendar widget update would be a good thing. For me, what I'm looking forward to most about Bell from a visual point of view is it just tidies up a look of some of the dialogue. So, you know, rather than having things at the bottom of the screen, you can have a yes-no dialogue floating in the middle. The menus look nicer. It just feels more modern as a UI. And there are a few bits where it's been simplified down. I think the toolbar in particular, going to kind of the pattern of three icons along the bottom rather than just a left and right soft key, is more in keeping with the idea of touch and sort of moving away from the ancestry of the kind of the two soft key devices. And equally well, the toolbar at the top makes sense on touch. So I'm really looking forward to that. But one thing that hasn't been touched upon much in any of the coverage I've seen of Bell is there are actually some changes to the way memory works, for example. So that should mean these devices are a bit more efficient on RAM, particularly when running things like Qt applications, which I think will be good news for the N8 and the C7 and those devices which do have less RAM than the sort of the second generation of devices, you know, the Bell devices, if you will. So it'll be interesting to see just how much of an impact some of those lower level changes have. They are in there, and actually understand from talking to some of Nokia's spokespeople, they're actually quite substantial, but not surprisingly, all the attention is on the visual element of this update.
Yeah, of course, many applications with Bell actually have four toolbar icons, Rafe, and I suspect that some can even have five at some point. There's no real reason why not, just screen width permitting. I've certainly seen quite a few with four. And it's, as you say, that's a lot more usable than having an options menu that you have to tap options and then, you know, work up and down five or six different options plus an exit right on the right. You've now got three or four things you want to do most often. They're there right in front of you that you can touch directly.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of a flatter hierarchy, and you see that throughout the UI, and that's kind of reflected in things like the pull-down notifications from the toolbar. In terms of that toolbar, there are four icon slots, and that's kind of the standard, but application can choose to only use three, two, or even just one of them. Five isn't supported, but I have seen a few third-party applications that implement their own toolbar to do precisely that. But the other big thing is, of course, the kind of the back button, which changes the kind of the navigation methodology, if you will. The idea is that you go through a sequence of screens and then you can press the back button to go back to one, back to the next, and so on. Indeed, you know, in theory at least, navigating through multiple applications. And that's sort of very reminiscent of the way things work on Android, and actually it really goes back to the way things worked on UIQ. So you know, it's a question of who's copying from whom. You know, Bell's been said to be very Android-like. I actually think in some ways it's very UIQ-like if you sort of update that. All the UI patterns really fall into the same thing. But I think the back button makes a difference just because it's a fairly natural way to do things. We know and love the Symbian multitasking, but you kind of have to make an active decision to use it. I wonder whether the back button might actually result in people multitasking more often. We'll have to see how it gets used when it's out in the wild. But for me at least, although there are a few things missing in Bell, an example of which is there's no longer support for remote drives, that's kind of web dev stuff, the things that have been taken away are relatively few, and the things that have been added are quite numerous, and the, sort of the update in general is very worthwhile in my opinion.
Yeah, you saw from the news feature that there was a pretty long bullet point list. When I started the feature, I thought, well, if there's only going to be four or five, it ended up being 10, 15, or even more, and I could have gone on with this. The multiple improvements in Bell I'm very much looking forward to. And you heard it here first, folks. The Sony Ericsson's, the lawyers will be going after Google, suing them for Android copying UIQ. With quite a few numbers stories came out in the last week or so. There's a couple we want to just highlight on without going into too much detail. First of all, there was the thing about 1.5 billion Series 40 phones. I know that's not Symbian, but it is relevant in the sort of Nokia ecosystem. 1.5 billion Series 40 phones have been sold, which prompted us to then think, how many Symbian phones have been sold since Symbian started? And we worked out that had just crossed the 500 million mark at the end of last year. Now, Rafe, that's... 500 million. I wonder how many of those are still in use. Any idea?
Yeah, well, I saw your estimate of, I think it was 400 million based on going back to 2008. I suspect that could be 2006, sorry. I thought that might be a little generous based on the number of Symbian phones that were sitting in my drawer not being used.
you've got about 100 million of those are actually in your office, are they?
Well, not quite that many, but I'm sure I'm not the only one who has sort of old phones sitting in drawers. I mean, a lot of them do get reused, and I think people often underestimate this secondary market, particularly in some markets, far more prevalent than it is, say, in the UK, where I don't suppose it's that uncommon to have a phone sitting in a sock drawer or something like that. But certainly in India and Africa, you know, in some countries in Africa, I understand that the sort of secondary phone market can be anything up to 50 to 60% of the handsets in use at any one time. Even so, I mean, I thought maybe your number was generous, but you could probably count it as an installed user base in that they might get used at some point. I mean, I think, you know, the active devices, you can probably look at the 2-year to 3-year timescale based on that's how long most contracts last, and then people think about updating their phone. And of course, there are those who update their phones much more frequently and those who never update their phones. But it is fair to say you still see, you know, N95s, N73s and devices like that in active use, despite the fact, you know, they're now more than a couple of years old in some cases.
I guess it depends on whether you're thinking about whether the device is active, as in the sense the user might actually play a part in the ecosystem and start downloading applications, or whether it's active as in can be turned on and used a few times a year, or used by a family member who doesn't even treat it as a smartphone.
And I think that's the really important point to make. I would say you probably have to look at phones that have been sold in the last 2 years to get even close to the kind of actively being used, active part of the ecosystem, and probably even less than that, because even phones that have been sold in the last 2 years, there's no guarantee people are kind of actively engaged in downloading applications or things like that. I mean, if you look at Nokia's numbers for the Nokia store, they're sort of 11 to 12 million downloads a day. So obviously there's a lot of devices out there downloading devices, and I should say of that number, about between 60 and 75% of those are Symbian devices, which, you know, would suggest multiple millions of devices active. I mean, if I had to choose a number, I'd probably say in the region of 150 to 200 million. But of course, all that we've been saying about devices falling out of use applies just as much to other platforms, which is why I think the 2-year timescale for actively used devices is probably as good as you're going to get. I mean, these things can't be terribly scientific or statistically rigorous.
Yeah, I think if you look at the last 2 years, then the number of active users on each mobile platform is probably not that dissimilar from each other. We'll make a very interesting chart. We must do that sometime. But certainly the number of Symbian devices sold, 500 million, is certainly a fairly significant amount, and certainly a headline figure that I think more tech journalists should at least acknowledge. And it's rather sad sometimes to see Symbian get forgotten in the great Android and iOS gold rush, just in my humble opinion. Also released this week were numbers, Nokia's quarter four, with 19.6 million smartphones sold in quarter four, which is not too shabby. How many of those were Symbian, Rafe?
Well, they didn't actually release a breakdown of this. What Nokia did say is that they'd sold a 1 million plus Lumia devices to date, but that was actually to January the 26th. So a rough estimate would suggest that maybe 500 to 700,000, it depends how you do the calculations, of those were in 2011. Plus, you have to account for the N9. I mean, I had a rough guess at 500,000. There isn't really a lot of data that you can use to back that up with, but based on kind of the limited release and things like that. So I would suggest it's probably fair to guess that the Symbian devices were around the 18.5 million mark, which is, of course, substantially up on what they were in both Q2, I should say, and Q3 of last year.
Rafe, how did that compare to the Christmas period last year? Because sales are kind of always down in the summer and up coming into the festive gift-giving period.
Yes, you're right. And looking back a year, there is obviously a big difference, kind of part of the continuing trend of Nokia's smartphone in decline, you know, all this transition. In fact, I titled the post, In the Heart of Transition. If you look back at Q4 2010, That's when Nokia sold 28.6 million units, one of the highest levels ever for smartphones. So obviously that's down 31% year on year. That's obviously, you know, a big loss of market share, but I don't think that's necessarily as big as people were expecting it to be. There are the signs of a bit of recovery going on here. And in that sense, I think the sort of shipment numbers were quite good because they were up substantially. Whether they were up more than seasonality, I would suggest just a little bit, looking at the historical figures. You know, there's actually a lot of variation from year to year. But if you add the Windows phone devices on top, you know, you get a pretty impressive result. You know, going up from sort of 16.5, 16.8 odd million the previous quarters up to 19.5. I suspect that was probably ahead of most people's expectations.
Yeah, I think when February 11th came and went, and Symbian was announced as transitioning to a franchise platform, whatever the heck that meant. But at the time, Nokia did eventually say, by the way, Symbian's not totally dead. We do intend to sell 150 million more Symbian smartphones from this point onwards. Now, we've got to the end of 2011, Rafe. I guess we've had something in the region of 50 million of those have now been sold throughout this year. Do we think they will actually get to 150 million by the time they stop selling Symbian? I suspect they'll get over 100, but might just stop short of 150.
Yes, I think you could be right there. I mean, actually, Nokia addressed this exact point in the earnings call with these Q4 results. And yes, depending on how you look at it, there between 50 and 65 million, depending how much of quarter one you include in the numbers. I would suggest, yes, they won't meet the 150 million figure, or at least not as early as they're expecting. For example, I guess I should read out the what Stephen Elop, the CEO, said about Symbian devices. In certain markets, there has been an acceleration of the anticipated trend towards lower-priced smartphones with specifications that are different from Symbian's traditional strength. As a result of the changing market conditions, combined with our increased focus on Lumia, we now believe that we will sell fewer devices than we previously anticipated. So I think you can read that to mean less than 150 million. Does that mean the numbers are going to crash? No, I just think it's going to be lower than expected. And I think anyone who's seen the rise of Android in 2011 in particular, particularly if you look at the mid-tier and the lower mid-tier price segments, that won't really come as a massive surprise. Android's accelerated, I think, more quickly than almost anyone anticipated. So particularly in the lowest cost smartphone devices, there's more competition for Symbian than we were expecting. In some markets, that's exacerbated by certain conditions. On their earnings call, Stephen Elop actually talked about China as an example and said that the operators there are really pushing 3G subscriptions. And as a result of that, Symbian isn't necessarily as well placed as it might be. And it applies to other competitors, but really it was homegrown manufacturers in China that were providing the competition there. And he actually pointed towards Symbian not having a broad enough portfolio in the TDS CDMA space, that's the Chinese 3G, and also CDMA, where of course there are no Symbian devices whatsoever. So that's, you know, not really that much of a surprise to me, but I think it probably does mean that Q1 of this year could be a little bit grim, as could Q2, simply because Nokia's sort of got this time of transition, and the time available to them has actually been compressed, I think, by market factors. It's nothing they've done themselves particularly. I'm sure some people would jump in and say it was the way they announced the sort of death, in inverted commas, of Symbian, or the winding down. I suspect there's an element of that, but I think actually the external competitive factors are far more interesting reasons to look at. Basically, it is about Android being competitive in that low space. And Nokia has got a dual challenge here. It's got to bring Windows Phone down to replace some of the Symbian devices, but it's also got to get its next generation of Series 40 devices out. But as you commented with that 1.5 billion number, the sort of Series 40 or the mobile phones business is doing well, and that's pretty evident in the numbers as well. They had better margins in mobile phones than almost anywhere else, actually, you know, making quite a bit of money there. And the sales have held up remarkably well this year, in thanks part to the sales of dual SIM devices. And if you consider that, I think the number of mobile phone devices sold dropped 1% year on year, but if you consider the number of mobile phones being replaced by smartphones, that's actually a very, very positive result. So, you know, the smartphones continue as expected, but it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens next because of this talk about Symbian facing more competition than expected. But I think from what we've been saying in earlier podcasts, no real surprise for us there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just me, but I'm still rather sad. Now, at the start of 2012, we've got to the point where all the little niche uses of Symbian are kind of winding down, and Symbian basically is Nokia, and Nokia basically is Symbian in that regard. So when we're talking about Symbian, we are just talking about Nokia. And, of course, the other big headline figure, Rafe, in the quarter four results from Nokia, and they quoted an operating loss of almost €1 billion. But that's not really from devices. That's rather misleading, isn't it?
It is a bit misleading. I mean, this $1 billion loss, I mean, makes for a great headline, but actually it's almost entirely due to a write-down of the Navtec asset. I mean, the way this works, when you buy a company for a certain amount of money, the value that you pay for it is then put on the books. And the actual assets of the company are worth a certain amount. And in the case of Navtec, I think it was an $8 billion or so acquisition cost, of which the assets, you know, things like equipment, offices, existing contracts, worth maybe €1 billion. So the rest of it gets applied to the books as so-called goodwill. But Nokia did an assessment and found that this goodwill was no longer worth what it was, and so did a write-down of just over €1 billion. I mean, in one sense, this is an accounting trick, and there's actually reasons for doing this, for tax efficiency reasons, I suspect. Also, it doesn't hurt to do this assessment now and sort of write it off when people are already expecting relatively bad news from Nokia, so they'll be able to make 2012 look that much better. I mean, maybe that's slightly cynical. I mean, there's nothing illegal about this. It's, you know, it's how things are done, but that's why there's such a big headline loss. So actually, it's more interesting to look at the non-IFRS operating profit, and non-IFRS is basically taking out all of these one-off charges that you get. So something like, you know, a write-down, but also when you do restructuring costs like that. And in that case, the profit is actually at €478 million, which is still down 56% year on year. It's up 90% quarter on quarter. If you look at device and services, that's the bit that makes the mobile phones. That's $292 million in margins at 5%, which all in all is actually pretty healthy, all things concerned. I mean, people will, of course, point to Samsung and Apple, who had their amazing, frankly, Q4 results, both in terms of smartphone shipments. You know, Apple, 37 million, Samsung, around 35 million, and obviously very profitable as well. But you can then compare it against, you know, HTC, Sony Ericsson, Motorola, and actually Nokia's results are, you know, better than those. So in one sense, it's sort of number three in terms of profitability and the result expectations. But certainly they're going to need to respond to Samsung and Apple in the future.
Rafe, let's put a bit of balance on here. Everybody will go, you're called all about Symbian, of course you're going to find the bad things. If you, hand on heart, had to see where the problems were in these numbers that have come up, and what the, you know, the big dangers are and the sky is falling, could you?
Yes, I mean, I would actually look to the thing we've just talked about, which is Symbian sales declining faster than expected in 2012. So it's going to be quite hard to manage the profit margins in the devices and services division there because of that. You know, anytime you move away from your expected profile, that becomes more difficult to manage because the cash flow changes. And actually, Nokia recognizes, they say that they're having to make some one-off charges for Symbian, accounting for excess components that they've already ordered or are contracted to order. So that will actually mean effectively the cost of producing each Symbian device will be slightly higher, which of course has a knock-on effect on pricing and margins. You also see that in some of the other things they talk about in terms of pushing the Lumia. They're having to spend more on marketing and sort of the launch activities, if you will. So as a result, the margins predicted for Q1 and to a certain extent later in 2012 as well are significantly lower than what you had in 2011. You know, they're saying it's about the break-even point, so it could be just below or above. So those are kind of that's the bad news, I think, in these numbers. People were maybe expecting 2012 to be more of a positive turnaround, but I think the truth is actually the turnaround is going to go well into 2012 in terms of the negative effects, which is probably fair to say you need to look at H2 or even 2013 to sort of answer the question that everybody wants to know. You know, was the right decision made about Windows Phone versus going MeeGo or Android or whatever the other options would be? So for me, that's the negative news in these results. I guess if you're going to look at the other thing, despite the positive news around mobile phones, that is still a shrinking segment. And so if you want to be strong somewhere, the best place to be strong is not in the bit of your business that is likely to shrink the most just because of the pattern of the mobile market. You know, smartphones are all important. So while Nokia is still a volume device winner, still the biggest mobile manufacturer, it's not got the market share or the value share in smartphones. So that's the bad thing, and that's what people will look at and make the decision on share purchase and everything else on. And that's the thing that Nokia needs to address.
Maybe it's just the eternal optimist in me, but I still reckon 20 million smartphones a quarter. Yes, I know I'm perhaps being a trifle over-optimistic here, but it's still a viable smartphone ecosystem in terms of a community. We all love playing with the Symbian platform, with the Nokia devices. 20 million smartphones per quarter two or three years ago would have seemed pretty good. And it's still a significant amount of phones. It's not just the installed base. There are tens of millions of new Symbian smartphone users per quarter arriving in the world, and they're people we can interact with and people we can enjoy discussing stuff with, people who can read the articles on allaboutsymbian.com. So I refuse to be drawn into the doom and gloom in the general tech world with regards to Symbian. I'm sorry, I am the eternal optimist, and I will remain thus throughout 2012. There we are. I've said my piece. And now, Nokia Social 1.5 has been released. I thought, woohoo, it appeared on my N8's software update screen, Rafe. So I proceeded to download it. It downloaded it, started installing, and said, sorry, this is Symbian Belle only, which is rather disappointing. So what? Quite why SW Update couldn't realize that my N8 was still stuck on Anna, and the Nokia Social 1.5 didn't apply, I do not know. But tell us what's in the update, Rafe, and what we can all enjoy playing with in a couple of weeks.
Yes, we should probably mention, first of all, that 1.4 is also new because most people are on 1.3 at the moment, and 1.5 was kind of an update to that to do a few bug fixes. So we should probably mention them all together. And really, in terms of version 1.4, I think the big deal is that the performance has been improved, so that when you're scrolling through things, it happens more quickly and the application loads more quickly. It's still a kind of combination of web runtime, Qt, and native application, a sort of a peculiar hodgepodge, if you will. But performance has definitely been increased. But I think the thing that people will notice most of all is kind of the updated visual look. So it, you know, comes in line with Belle rather than the older style Anna look. So that means, you know, a bottom toolbar with icons on it, sort of nice looking menus. And that actually is good because it enables you to switch between the various modules of Social, I think, more quickly. And so you get at the kind of experience or the things you want to do more quickly. The other big update is kind of for the widgets, and this kind of goes along with Belle, of course. And in 1.4, what you got was, in addition to the kind of basic Social widget that shows you your latest status updates, you actually get a specific widget for both Facebook and Twitter, acting as shortcuts to drop you quickly into functionality. So it's updating status updates, seeing your direct messages, doing a search for Twitter. Similarly, on Facebook, you get events and notifications as well. And notifications has been added to the Facebook functionality. It's actually pretty useless at the moment because you can't do an awful lot apart from see that there have been notifications, which is a shame. And then in the 1.5, that actually came up with another update to the widgets, and that was the major update for 1.5. And it's actually a kind of a triple height widget that's like the email widget in that you can scroll up and down and see the last 10 status updates. I think that in particular really increases the functionality for the home screen, and you can get all that key functionality plus, you know, setting a new status update directly from the home screen rather than having to jump into the application. So it's the idea, I guess, of glanceable content. And for most people, you know, that's going to be probably, you know, what they want most of the time, you know, seeing the last 10 updates and then, you know, setting an update themselves. And for most people, that should be sufficient. I'm sure power users are probably screaming right now saying only 10 updates. But for most people, you know, it's kind of good enough. And if you're a power user, you're probably already using one of the dedicated third-party Facebook clients or Gravity for something like Twitter. So I was actually quite impressed by this update. You know, in one sense, you kind of dispense it and go, can't they look at some of the third-party clients and see the great functionality there, you know, Fascinate or FMobi or Gravity or something like that. But actually, this is the stuff that's going to be available out of the box, you know, the first experience you get. And to be fair, it does work. So it's a worthy update. Getting the Belle look into Social is obviously, you know, a helpful thing because it feels like more consistency when you're using it on a Belle device. And I like in particular the widgets on the home screen.
Yeah, and it's very analogous really to how Windows Phone does social, in the sense that that also has basic Facebook and Twitter functionality baked in, if you like, from day one for new users. But it only takes you so far, and power users will want to download dedicated clients. It's very, very analogous and very similar. I'm just looking forward to the newer and faster functionality.
That's right, and it's worth mentioning, actually, one of the things that also brings in is the auto-linking of contacts. So it looks at the email address on things like Facebook and perhaps Twitter as well, and sees if there's a commonality in your address book and your contacts application, and will automatically link the two. So when you're in contacts, you can jump to that particular social contact in Nokia Social and see basic status information. It's not as slick as Windows Phone or some of the other implementations, but actually it's better than some of the default behavior of the other platforms. And there's something to be said for having your thumbnails automatically updated by this process. And certainly I found, after installing Social 1.4, far more of my contacts had thumbnails than they had before. Although I would warn you that if you do this, if you set the thumbnails yourself, it will overwrite them, which might cause a bit of irritation in some cases.
Yeah, I think we're used to that on other mobile platforms now, Rafe. I think the thought of actually taking your own photos of people with shock horror and having them as your thumbnails long since went out the window, rather sadly. But everything is now driven by Facebook, whether you like it or not. Another update, Nokia Maps. This is not to the actual core Maps code itself, but Maps 3.6 onwards. If you now look at the More section on your main Maps menu, there's now a new item, brand new, 360 Cities. Now, this is a generic panoramic photograph social system that's been going for a while, I think, on the wider internet. But Nokia has now put in a kind of a plugin which gives you the basic panoramas. You can't, on the 360 Cities website, you can actually use a kind of virtual reality thing to scroll around and imagine you're at the place, and the photographs seamlessly morph around you as if it really would be point of view stuff. On Nokia Maps, you get a very flat representation. And it's also uses what's called flat Mercator projection, which basically means it's all squished. But having said that, it is there. Maybe Nokia can produce a version 2 of the functionality. Do go and play with it. 360 Cities. There were a surprising number of panoramas around me. It wasn't just, I'm in the UK, here's a panorama of London, the River Thames. There were quite a few of little minor towns around me, including Henley and Sonning and a few others. So very much worthwhile going to have a play. And also, I do have a play at the 360 Cities website itself, and you can see some of the panoramas that have been worked on by users around the world. Some of them are really, really impressive. Just thought I'd give that a plug here. David, CNN, you've been doing some citizen journalism. Does it actually work?
Yes, it does. Just to go over the basics, CNN is a news app where you can get text-based and video news items from said news agency. However, they also have a section called iReport, which is, and what they do in the iReport section, they don't just take any stories, they actually list assignments that they're interested in, that topics that they want people to cover, and then you can go and take photos or videos and submit it through the application. You do have to type a story into the application as well, which I'm not sure how well that will work, especially because it doesn't support a split-screen keyboard, so it's going to be hard to kind of go through and proofread. So I do recommend maybe writing your story in, say, the Notes application first and then pasting it in. But I think this is a really good move. Interestingly, the BBC application on Android also supports this kind of functionality, but not on Symbian. So I'm glad to see CNN supporting it, because citizen journalism, ever since the likes of YouTube and other photo sharing sites took off, established news agencies have been exploiting this as a way of getting coverage of events that they couldn't themselves get. And also, just as a little side plug, my other writing job is on Blotter, which is another a complete citizen journalism site. And so that just shows how much this area is taking off. And I think it's good because it democratizes the way of getting news to people. The only caveat is you just have to make sure that the news services that are taking this have appropriate fact-checking. But so CNN is providing a channel for you to do that. So if you feel like being a roving reporter and just starting out in the world of news, this might be a way to do it and a way to get known.
David, what was the kind of the design of the application like? Were you impressed that CNN had sort of gone to some efforts here? I understand that it's or Qt-based, or uses some of the QML design in it at least.
Yes, it was fairly Qt, Bell-ish looking, it did have a feel of it, but there's a toolbar across the bottom and the icons change depending on context. And for the text-based news and video section, there is a horizontally scrolling list of topics at the top. So it is actually very swishly designed. I was actually very impressed with it. It looked a step above your standard Symbian application, actually.
I don't know what you're saying, David. We are running out of time, guys, though. We're going to have to call a halt to it there, but we will be back next week, of course, in the Insight podcast. Do write in if you've got your comments on what you'd like us to discuss. We're always open for open-ended discussion topics, things we can really get our teeth into, so do please write in. You can catch us on Twitter at AAS, of course. But until then, goodbye up in Hull.
From David Gilson, we'll talk to you next week.
And a goodbye up in Edinburgh.
Bye from me. The sun has come out, so welcome to the Twilight Zone, I think.
And a goodbye down in Sussex, where it's also sunny,
goodbye
I'm sure.
From me also, and I promise I'll try to talk less next week.
You said that.
I mean it this time, honest.
And I'm going to buy a chess clock.
That's a good idea. Bye for now.